tonight. Well, I have been at camp this past week, Camp Challenge in Bedford, Indiana. If you're unfamiliar with it, this is a camp that Meridian has been supporting for a very long time. And I have actually been going to camp for a very long time. And I, if you know anything about me, I used to live at camp. That was my whole world for a while. And I'm wearing this shirt to remind us to be praying over the people that we have down there. I want to remind you all to pray for Chase Standifer as he hosts his first summer as the executive director. That is a big challenge. As someone who has been the assistant director, I know what my first summer was like, and it was a lot. So be praying for him and his family as they make this transition. Be praying for the staff there, especially the Meridian people that we have on staff. This year, as for the summer staff, we have Sophie Finley, Sam Finley, Ben Harris, Matthew Harris, Carissa Stewart, and Carson Burke, who are all down at Camp Challenge for the whole summer. Be praying for them. We also want to be praying for our food service people who are coordinating our meals. Jay and Maria Thomas have made Meridian their church home when they are back in Indiana for the warmer months, and we are so thankful for that. But they do so much for the food. And this year, also, Rick and Vicky McKinney have stepped up to do one of the meals every day this summer. So we are so excited that we have so many people who are being there all summer, and we want to pray over them. I will say, like, camp ministry is so rewarding, but it is hard. It is hard work, and it is some of the most impactful work I might ever do, I feel that, truly, but also it is some of the hardest that I've ever done. So be praying for them all summer. That's why we've given you these little pieces of paper that are out in the lobby. Take these when you leave. In addition to all of those people, this week specifically, we are sending Nick Thomas, Jacob Harris, and Evan Key down to be the session directors at Senior High. Josiah's going down to camp, and Kaylee is also going down. So we have some campers we're sending, which is awesome. And then Katie Thomas, my own sister, is functioning as the nurse. So we have a lot of praying to do this week, folks. It is going to be a lot of Meridian people, and I think we have a responsibility to be praying them all the way down and back from camp. And today is an exciting day here because we start a new series. And again, I used to tell you, my summers used to be all camp all the time. But even before I was on staff there, I was a camper for 12 years. I never missed a year of camp. And I realized while I was working there, and I kind of remembered this because I remember they used to only do camp starting in third grade, and it was a week long. So if you were a first or second grader, you didn't get to go to camp. But that right when I was able to go, they started Young Explorers Camp. And I remember joking with my older sister, because I was like, you had to wait till you were a third grader, and I don't. I get to go in the first grade, like a true younger sibling, you know? And so I realized that that was 20 years ago this weekend is when the first Young Explorers Camp happened. And I got to go and be a speaker. And so I was sitting there during worship, and it, like, all of a sudden it hit me. It was like I was in the first batch of students who ever got to go as a first grader to camp. And now 20 years later, I'm here speaking. And I kept thinking, like, wow, what's God going to do in the next 20 years? Like, which one of these students is going to come back and be speaking to the next group of kids? And so I was just really blown away by the goodness of God and all the work that he's doing at camp already. And it was just really cool. And I was going back and reflecting on what my summers were like at camp as a camper. And there was one thing that was at every single camp that I've ever been at. And that is the song Brother Friend, which was the song that you heard played earlier. And if you don't know what that is, it is a song that you do with motions. And you find a partner and you do the motions and you sing a little song. And it's a way to meet new people. But also you want to do it with, like, your best friends because you want them to know that you're there, you know, they're your sunshine on a cloudy day, right? You want to, like, do all of that. And so that was just something that was at every single camp. And it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with Jesus, but it was so true to the heart of camp and the community that happens and the friendship building that happens. And it actually is the reason why we named our summer series Brother, Sister, Friend. And I think it's fitting because I want to take a few minutes to talk about our summer series and the fact that we're going to be spending the entire summer talking about friendships, which is maybe a little bit of an odd thing for a church to spend a whole summer talking about. But the more that we were talking about it, the more we thought it was important, and the more we felt God calling us to address this topic in our church. And so we are going to talk about all summer how friendships are good for us spiritually. But while we were, I want to give you a little background to how this came about. So the idea came for the series a long time ago when we were exploring launching the idea of our one person. So if you've been around here, you know that we're asking you to try to bless one person this year, the same person, be praying for them, be listening to them. And we kind of got through this process of like, this program doesn't work unless you establish a friendship. This bless method won't work unless you establish a friendship. And so the idea, though, is that you're picking one person to give hope to and to show the kingdom of God and to show them love. And it starts off okay, right? If you don't have a friendship, you can pray for anybody, right? Even if you're not friends with them, you can be praying for them. And that's not very awkward. But as soon as you move down to listening to them, it gets a little weird if you're not friends with them, right? And it gets a little awkward. But then all of a sudden, you're going to have to share a meal with them in the eat stage. And again, if you're not friends, that's awkward. I don't know if you've ever been in a meal with someone you don't know or don't really like, and you're like, this is great, you know? It's a little awkward. And then all of a sudden, you have to serve this person. And if you're not friends with them, just like a random person coming up and like doing things for you is a little weird to me. I don't know about you, but I don't know if I would love it if someone I did not have a relationship with just came up and started giving me things or doing things for me. I don't know how I'd feel about that. I'd probably be a little scared. So this method, we realized quickly, is one that requires friendship. And so we thought that it would be important to talk about friendship and maybe how to be friends. How can we grow in friendship? How can we be better friends to our people around us? And so this idea is something that we were like, we need to devote some time to this. Because friendship is so important in the Bible. And if you read the Bible, you know that there are so many good examples of friends. The Proverbs are full of stories and advice about having and being good friends. And so we're going to spend the whole summer talking about the spiritual benefits. But before we go on, I want to talk a little bit about the physical benefits of friendship. Because there are real life applicable reasons why friendship is important. So there is an organization called the Blue Zones who first started as a research team that wanted to identify areas around the world where there are a higher percentage of people living to the age of 100. And then when they identify these groups of people who are living to the age of 100, they call them a blue zone. And these communities were all across the world, all on all the different continents. It wasn't a location-based thing. But when they started researching, they found 9 commonalities that they all had. And I'm not going to read all of them, but I do want to read a couple of them to you. Because I thought, when I first discovered this, I thought, wow, this is really cool, especially for the church. The first one of them was purpose. So they said, knowing your sense of purpose is worth up to 7 years of extra life expectancy. And as the church, we have a really cool opportunity to teach purpose in people's life, the reason that we're here on earth. And if you have a clear vision of that purpose, you can, on average, add 7 years of extra life expectancy. Then the next one is belonging to a faith community is on this list. They said research shows that attending faith-based services, no matter the denomination, adds 4 times, if you attend 4 times per month, will add 4 to 14 years of life expectancy to your life. If you attend a religious service, a faith-based service, 4 times a month. Then the last one was called having the right tribe. And this is what they said about that. They said the world's longest lived people choose or were born into social circles that supported healthy behaviors and commitment to each other. So in other words, they were friends. They had good quality, strong friendships. And not just one, they had multiple people in their life outside of their family that were considered friends. Because here's the thing, we were created for community, and this proves that, right? If you have friends, they said you can add life expectancy, which I think is really cool. Did you know that playing with others is a milestone in child development? Sociologists gauge that this will start happening around the age of 4 years old. And it's something that for neurotypical people or people who don't have other cognitive differences, don't need to be taught this. This is something that we just do naturally as humans, which I think is really cool. They start by noticing the children next to them, and they will play around them in the same space. They might want a toy that another child has. But then they move into around 4 years old, they move into an idea of what they call cooperative play, which means that they're engaged in not only the toy, but also the other child. They're playing with both. And again, this is a fancy way of just saying that they're making friends. These children are just making friends. And it is a natural stage that people reach around the age of four. Now, arguably, children are the best at making friends. I don't know if you remember kindergarten, but you could just walk up to someone and be like, do you want to be my friend? And people just be like, yeah, I do. Can you imagine doing that as an adult? That's crazy. Because somewhere along the way, we lose that ability to make and maintain friendships. And there's probably a lot of different reasons. And throughout the series, we're going to explore some of that. But the reality is that adults are facing a loneliness crisis. So, according to the 2021 American Perspective Survey, 49% of adults said they had three or fewer close friends. Half said they have three or fewer close friends. Young men aged 18 to 29 are significantly more likely to talk with a parent than a friend if they have a personal problem. And 13% of Americans report they have no friends. One in 10 people you meet say they have no friends. We have a problem. We just went through a really isolating time in 2020, but our loneliness problem is only getting worse. And it was actually declining before COVID. COVID just accelerated this problem that we're seeing, and it is still declining to this day. But now that we know just how necessary community and friendship is, we wanted to devote some serious time from stage to talk about it. Because even now in the medical community, right, it's becoming standard practice on intakes form to ask if you have a meaningful connection in your life. Doctors are asking this because it has direct health benefits. So again, not only is this a spiritual benefit that we see in the Bible, but this is a physical thing that we are experiencing as a country, and we think that is the church's responsibility to address this because it is so important to all aspects of our life. So, when we are kicking off our series today, we were thinking of where's a good place to start. Where do we start in all of this? Because there's a lot to talk about. And basically what's going to happen is Daniel, Brandon, and I are going to come up on stage. And we're going to share to you what God is teaching us this summer about the importance of friendships. Places in the Bible where we see God is calling us to be better friends or to be better neighbors. And that's what we're going to be talking about this series. But when I was thinking of a good place to start, I think it's always safe to start with the life of Jesus. Right? I think we can all agree Jesus is a great, safe place to start. Probably in the starting point class, you guys are going to talk about Jesus, I would assume, right? But if you read the Gospels or the first four books of the Bible, you see that Jesus had a lot of friends. We hear about the 12 disciples that were probably the most famous, but he had a lot more friends than that. Because you might remember that we have Mary and Martha and Lazarus who were Jesus' friends. We hear about some wealthy friends that we had that helped fund his ministry. Jesus even made friends with tax collectors like Zacchaeus and Matthew. He had a lot of friends. But if I'm being honest with you, I have a favorite friend of Jesus's, and it's not even close. And that is Mary Magdalene. And I think, and I'm going to try to prove to you today that Mary Magdalene was the best friend that Jesus had. She was the best friend that Jesus had, and I think that can be proven through Scripture. So I'm going to go over that with you today. And I think, why not, when we're talking about friends, let's start with Jesus' best friend. Maybe not his personal best friend, but the one who showed him the most loyalty, and that's definitely Mary Magdalene. So, I've kind of made it my life mission to talk about Mary Magdalene because I think she's the coolest and I don't think she gets enough credit in churches today. But the problem is a lot of people don't talk about her because we don't know a ton about her, to be fair. We know that she came from a fishing family in Magdala, which is why she's called Mary Magdalene, because she was a woman from Magdala, which was a town right on the Sea of Galilee. So right where Jesus was starting his ministry, right near where Jesus grew up, she was from a town near there. We don't know exactly when she met Jesus, but we do know how she met Jesus. It's said that they met when Jesus cast demons out of her, and we know that after that she just like hung around. She was there and she kind of joined his mission. We don't know when that was, but we know it was early on. And so if she wasn't there for the entirety of Jesus's walk in ministry in his life, she was there for the majority of it. And I want to say this. I know I got to speak about Mary Magdalene when I first started coming to Meridian. It was like the second sermon I ever did here. I wasn't on staff yet. And I got to speak about her and I was really blessed by that. But so I addressed this then, but I think it's important that I address it again now because we have new faces here. And even if you need the reminder, we're going to take some time to address the rumors that have been spreading about Mary Magdalene, right? I'm going to protect her name for a minute. And we're going to address maybe some of the incorrect beliefs that exist around Mary Magdalene. And the first one that I think a lot of people have assumed is that Mary Magdalene was a prostitute. And this was a very common thing people assume about her. And this is because, this is a big church history thing. I'm going to sum it up in a very general way. But if you want more information, I can get you more information. But back a long time ago, when we were all still one big Catholic church, a pope was trying to make a point about women's leadership roles in the church and was trying to discredit some leaders that were rising up underneath him. And in order to do that, he took Mary Magdalene, Mary of Bethany, who we believe to be Martha's sister of Mary and Martha, and a prostitute that was named to have spent some time with Jesus. And he publicly claimed, with no evidence at all, that they were all the same woman, right? And so this woman who was in a lot of power around Jesus, who Jesus regarded very highly, and we'll talk about that later, now is discredited a little bit because of her history of sin, which in the whole scheme of the church, that's the whole point, right, is that we experience forgiveness, but it did discredit her name a lot. And so unfortunately, people don't talk about her a lot because of what they assume is her past, but we have no evidence of knowing is really true or not. And the next thing that people would assume, again, I do want to say that there is no evidence that any of those women were the same person. But there is some people who believe that Mary of Bethany and Mary Magdalene were the same. But for the sake of this sermon, we're going to assume that they were all three different people because it's not a widely accepted view within the church. So, but there is no evidence that any Mary mentioned in the Bible was a prostitute in her life. Again, that's the whole point of forgiveness, but we'll move on. All right, so the other rumor that has spread about Mary Magdalene is that she was the secret girlfriend or wife of Jesus. And this might sound crazy, but this is actually a very popular misconception. And it's not a bad thing if that's what you have been led to believe, because it actually originated from the book called The Da Vinci Code. And this book was written so close to a believable version of history that it has been a crazy source of misinformation and conspiracy. And let me be clear, there is no evidence, biblically or historically, of a romantic relationship between Jesus and anyone, okay? But especially Mary Magdalene, there is no evidence. That was just something that someone made up for a book, and history just kind of ran with it and assumed that it was true. Mary Magdalene was truly just a friend and disciple of Jesus, and because she was such a close friend of Jesus, we can follow her through the Gospels, and she can teach us a very important lesson about loyalty and friendship. So we're going to start and we're going to dive into her story. And we first hear her mentioned by name in Luke 8, 1 through 3. And I reference this, but we're going to read it together. And it says, "Soon afterwards, he began going around from one city and village to another, proclaiming and preaching the kingdom of God. The 12 were with him, which were the disciples, and also some women who had been healed of evil spirits and sicknesses. Mary, who was called Magdalene, from whom 7 demons had gone out, and Joanna, the wife of Chuza, Herod's steward, and Susanna, and many others who were contributing to support out of their private means." So we learn this here, that there is more than just the disciples who were with Jesus. Mary was there after she was healed, and she was one of many women who became financial supporters of the ministry, which I think is pretty cool. But this is a seemingly inconsequential verse that tells us one thing about the character of Mary Magdalene. I think it's super important. It seems like it doesn't matter, but I think it really does. And that's this. Once Mary Magdalene met Jesus, she was loyal to Jesus. She was there. She devoted all of her life and her time. And this was a really big deal. And it's fun for me to think now, knowing this, that she was probably at the events of the feeding of the 5,000 and the parables of Jesus, the Sermon on the Mount and the Last Supper. And Mary Magdalene not being mentioned by name is in a lot of these other stories isn't surprising because of how history was recorded at the time. So we can assume that she was there because she was mentioned as traveling with Jesus in Luke 8. So it says, historically women were only named if they played a significant role as a witness or had a quote-unquote speaking part. For lack of a better word, many women and children were not counted in censuses or attendance of events, and legally they could not be witnesses to a crime. So if they were the only witnesses to something, they could not participate as a witness in court because they were women. And so their names were often not listed. And so when they were listed, it's because the author of that section of scripture really wanted you to know who was there. It was really important that they were there. So the fact that Luke mentioned her is important because Luke is, out of the 4 gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, those are the first 4 books of the New Testament. They all tell the story of Jesus from start to finish from a little bit of a different perspective. Luke was the one who didn't actually know Jesus in person. All of the others, Mark is largely, his source was Peter. That's what's to be believed. So we could say like Peter knew Jesus, Matthew knew Jesus, and John knew Jesus. But Luke was one who was coming along afterward and interviewing people that he knew so that people who had never met Jesus could still have an account of his life. So Luke is the one writing this. And so I think Luke put Mary Magdalene's name here for a specific reason because he knows the end of the story. He's not writing this as it goes. He knew the end of the story and he knew it was important to mention Mary Magdalene by name. And so this is, again, why I personally believe that we get this detail from Luke here. And that's because it establishes the loyalty that Mary Magdalene has exhibited to Jesus from the beginning of his ministry. So Luke is saying that you're going to hear about Mary Magdalene later, but I need you to know that she was there from the start. And so it's important that you know that. And we're going to find out why. Because the next time that we hear Mary Magdalene referenced by name is at the crucifixion of Jesus, which we know is at the end of his ministry. So we get one reference of her just knowing that she was there at the beginning. And then we don't hear about her specifically until the end. And that's in Matthew 27, verses 50 through 56. And it says this, "And Jesus cried out again and with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. And behold, the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, and the earth shook, and rocks were split. The tombs were opened, and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised. And coming out of tombs after his resurrection, they entered the holy city and appeared to many. Now the centurion and those who were keeping guard over Jesus, when they saw the earthquake and the things that were happening, became very frightened and said, 'Truly, this was the Son of God.' Many women were there looking on from a distance who had followed Jesus from Galilee while ministering to him. Among them was Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Joseph, who is Jesus' mother, and the mother of the sons of Zebedee, which is John and James, the disciples' mother. So it was at the end when Jesus died, the three people who we know for sure were there was his mom, which makes sense because a lot of moms tend to stick around for things like that, his best friend's mom, and then Mary Magdalene, arguably his most loyal friend. None of his other friends were there. None of the other male disciples were there. We do know that for a fact. So when it was evening, so we're going to go on to Matthew 57, verses 61, and this is directly after what I just read. And it says, this is when Jesus was buried. It says, when it was evening, there came a rich man from Arimathea named Joseph, who himself had also become a disciple of Jesus. This man went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Then Pilate ordered it to be given to him. And Joseph took the body and wrapped it in clean linen cloth and laid it on his own new tomb, which he had hewn out of the rock. And he rolled a large stone against the entrance of the tomb and went away. And Mary Magdalene was there, and the other Mary, Jesus' mom, sitting opposite of the grave. Even after death, Mary was still loyal. She helped prepare his body and lay him to rest according to the customs of the day. But even still, Mary proves her loyalty once again on top of this. In John 20, we read that she's mentioned as going back to the grave. Constantly going back to the grave. And one day she goes and the body is gone, which we know is good news now, right? But back then that was really bad news, right? And she is scared and she runs back to Peter and John, which are two of the big three of the disciples that you've heard Daniel talk about. But they see this and they see that she's correct. The body is gone. And they're scared of being recognized as one of Jesus' followers because that means that Jesus wasn't even safe in death. That's what they're thinking. So that means they're definitely not safe now. So they go home. Peter and John go home. But John records that Mary stayed. And so we're going to pick this story up in John 20, starting in verse 11. And it says this, "But Mary was standing outside the tomb and weeping. And so, as she wept, she stopped and looked into the tomb, and she saw two angels in white sitting, one at the head and one at the feet, where the body of Jesus had been laying. And they said to her, 'Woman, why are you weeping?' And she said to them, 'Because they have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him.' When she said this, she turned around, and she saw Jesus standing there, and did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, 'Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking?' Supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, 'Sir, if you have taken him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away.' Jesus said to her, 'Mary.' She turned around and said to him, 'Rabboni,' which means teacher. Jesus said to her, 'Stop clinging to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. But go to my brethren and say to them, I ascend to my Father and your Father and my God and your God.' Mary Magdalene came announcing to the disciples, 'I have seen the Lord,' and that he had said these things to her." I love this picture of Mary, right? Because she was loyal to Jesus even after she thought his body was gone forever. She still stayed. And I love that when she thought Jesus was the gardener, she said, "Show me where you put his body if you took it, and I will carry it back here myself," right? Like, she is loyal to Jesus. But when she figures out the incredible truth, she runs and she hugs Jesus for so long that he has to tell her to get off, right? He's like, go tell everyone else that I'm here too. Like, you cannot stay here all day, right? He said, go get his brethren. Go get his siblings. Go get his friends. See, Mary Magdalene was rewarded for her loyalty to Jesus by being allowed to be the first one to witness the resurrected Jesus. And the reason she got to be the first one to see Jesus isn't because she was super special or because Jesus was making some big feminist statement about women in ministry, although I would love that. That's not what was happening, right? It was because she was the one who was there. She stayed around. Everybody else left. And so she got to see Jesus first because she was the one who stayed. And she ended up being one of the most reliable witnesses that we have to Holy Week, because she was the one who was there at every single stage of Holy Week and saw the entire thing. And women couldn't even appear in court to be a witness. And yet somehow Mary Magdalene has found herself as the most reliable witness to Jesus and his life, death, and resurrection. The most important thing to ever happen in Christian history. She is the most reliable witness. And there's an old spiritual that's often sung around Holy Week. It's called, "Were You There When They Crucified My Lord?" And it asks a series of questions. It says this: were you there when they crucified my Lord? Were you there when they nailed him to the cross? Were you there when they laid him in the tomb? And were you there when the stone was rolled away? The one person who can answer yes to all of those questions is Mary Magdalene. She was there. She saw him be crucified. She saw him get nailed to the cross. She saw him be buried into the tomb. And she saw him be raised from the dead in life. She was a witness to all of these things. That's awesome. But what can she teach us about friendship? Well, I think the reason that I wanted to start with Mary was because she was there. And a good friend is one who is present. We're going to talk a lot about different things that we can do to be a good friend. But if we're not around, it's never going to work. If we're not present with people, both physically and emotionally, we can never actually start a friendship. The first step in making friends is to be, in being a good friend, is to be around. Step in if there's a need. Because if it was a financial help that Jesus needed, Mary was there. If it was comfort that Jesus needed, Mary was there. If it was taking care of someone in a really hard situation, Mary was there. And if it was fighting on behalf of you, even after you had died, Mary was there. She was a loyal friend. And the moral of Mary's story is this: be present. If you want to make friends, show people that you will be there for them. Engage in what they're doing. Offer help. Physically be there with them. Be present in your community at coffee shops, the library, the gym, the store. Become a regular at places and meet people. Don't be so wrapped up in our concerns for ourselves or our schedule that we forget to look at the people around us and be present in that moment. Let's all be challenged and encouraged by Mary's story. Let's be present this week. Let's not devolve into and disappear into our own schedules and our own paths. Because when we're present, we just might be able to witness something amazing that the Lord has in store. As the band comes back up, I want to read the lyrics to this silly little camp song that inspired this whole series. But when I'm reading these words, I want you to think about this from the perspective of Jesus and Mary's friendship. Think about how Jesus healed her. Think about them traveling together. Think of Mary walking through with Jesus through the hardest experiences, of them being reunited when Jesus conquered death. Listen to these words and let them warm your heart. You're my brother, you're my friend, you're my beginning and my end. You're all around me when the world turns and walks away. You are my sunshine on a cloudy day. You are the rain that washed my blues away. And I can always count on you, because you're my brother, sister, you're my friend. Let's bow your heads and pray with me. God, thank you so much for today. Thank you for friends. Thank you for being a model of having good friends. Thank you for choosing good friends who would stay with you and then report back to all of us what they had seen. God, I pray that you would make us more like Mary Magdalene. I pray that you would make us loyal to the people around us. I pray that you would help us engage with them. I pray that you would help us be present where we're at. Lead people to us where we can be present in their life, God. I pray that you would help us detach from our own schedules and busyness so that we can step in and be present with other people in their time of need. God, I pray that you will use the words that we have learned from Mary Magdalene and you will plant them in our hearts. Let it grow into something fruitful for you, God. I pray that you will use what we've learned to make us better people, better neighbors, and better friends. We love you so much, and we'll give you all of the glory. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.